Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing the reminiscences of somebody who was very well known in this area in the early days of the BBC local radio station BBC Radio Brighton. And we'll be going on a tour of Preston Manor, which reopens to the public on April the 1st. So without further ado, let's get started by hearing from our mystery personality. Chris English came into the studio a few days ago to speak to him, and I'll hand over to Chris to tell you who he is.
John Henty, the voice of BBC Radio Brighton. John, a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, yes, as we all know, 50 years, because 1968 Radio Brighton opened in this city, February the 14th, and I was one of the lucky producers. There were four of us, and it was a very, very exciting time.
I bet. And certain things that came along, like the Early Bird Club and all of that sort of thing. Were all those your idea?
100%. The great thing about local radio was the fact that anything went, if you like. If you came up with a good idea and the manager, Bob Gunnell, approved of the idea, then you were able to do that. So I remember Des Lynham, one of the early sports people who worked with us at Radio Brighton. He wanted to do a little sort of satirical sort of play or series. And he put the idea to me, I put the idea to Bob, and we did a little lunchtime programme which was called How Lunchtime It Is. It was around the time of David Frost doing those sort of programmes. So Des often refers to that, actually, because not only did he write the material with me, but he also appeared. It was satire as such, and it was a strange time, sort of a lunchtime event for about 15 minutes, but we had the ability to do that, and the same could be said for the Early Bird Show and all the other programmes, the unusual programmes that happened on Radio Brighton.
And that's what made it special, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yes. It wasn't format radio by any means, and above all else, it was local. In other words, people, gardeners could come in, men who sailed. I mean, you would remember a programme called Sea Sports. That was very much Bob's idea. He said, we've got to serve the sailing community in the area, and Bob suggested that I should look after that. And I said, well, Bob, I don't know much about sea sports, but so he said, well, all you have to do is to get some of the enthusiasts. He said, there are plenty in the town, as it was then. He said, get them round a table and just let them talk, which by and large is exactly what we did. I found them a signature tune, which you always had to have a signature tune. And then on a Sunday, it used to be a Sunday morning, they would all come in and they would feature for about 15 minutes or so talking about the various races, etc., etc. It was innovative stuff.
And I remember the bus garage.
Yes. Oh, indeed. Well, I mean, we have travelled and traffic information now coming out of our ears. But in those days, the buses were they still are important, but they were terribly important. And then we would cross, of course, to Conway Street. And one man I remember was called Mr. Arthur Percy. Percy. I'll never forget Arthur Percy. They became personalities in their own right, actually. And, of course, links to Gatwick Airport, etc.
And what have you been doing since those days? I mean, you said that's 50 years ago, we're still here. What have you been up to?
Well, a lot of water has passed under the Palace Pier, I think we can safely say. I went freelance in 1978. I really had worked my way through all the programmes at Radio Brighton, so I thought I needed a challenge. Created my own little studio, so I love seeing your studio here. It's excellent. And there I produce programmes for hospital radio. Once again, there is a link with yourselves. And that was sponsored by British Telecom, which was valuable. And we did that for about 7 or 8 years. And we very proud of those programmes. And then a whole range of things, my association obviously with football clubs, the Albion and another club in South London. And additionally, of course, there was Max Miller. I was the chairman at one point of the Max Miller Appreciation Society. So I've been very busy.
And talking about Max Miller, I mean, we've heard recently that we've lost Ken Dodd, and a great loss to the entertainment business.
It was a great loss, and certainly felt by all members of the Max Miller Appreciation Society. It's a very strong society, and we had strong links with Ken Dodd. He was our patron, and not just a passing interest. Whenever he came down to either Worthing or Brighton or Eastbourne, he would always be in touch with our members. He came to one of our garden parties and was brilliant. On another occasion, of course, we had to re-dodicate. We re-dodicated the Max Miller statue in New Road, and who was there to do it but Ken Dodd. He was wonderful, and as everybody said at the time when he died, he had time for everybody. That was the whole thing. People joked about time and how he went on and on and on, but it was the way that he gave his time to people. Even after one of those marathon shows, if you went backstage, and many of us did, Ken would be holding an audience there, you know, and would probably not escape the theatre until about 3 o'clock in the morning, driving the management mad, of course. Amazing, amazing man.
Will you ever see anybody like that again?
No, and we always said of Max Miller, and I'm sure many of your listeners will agree with this, there'll never be another. That's what we always say. There'll never be another lady, there'll never be another. And it's totally 1,000% true of Ken Dodd, and I sincerely hope, and I know you agree, I hope no one ever attempts to be another Ken Dodd with a tickling stick. That would be dreadful, and I know what I'd do with a tickling stick if he tried.
And Mabel Lucy Atwell features in your criteria somewhere.
All started with Radio Brighton. We used to play records, and people would send in requests on postcards. Occasionally a Mabel Lucy Atwell card would come in, and for the sake of something to say, I'd say, oh my goodness, another Mabel Lucy Atwell card. I wondered who the devil she was, found out, contacted the family. The family and I got on very well. We mounted an exhibition here in Brighton, 1979, devoted to her, and I've been a lifelong enthusiast of a remarkable children's illustrator ever since, and I've got a wonderful collection of all her works, her biscuit tins, her plaques, everything that she ever did. She was an exceptional woman, and she had links with Sussex, by the way.
And is that still going? Can people still see that memorabilia?
I wish the answer was yes, because it's rather frustrating. I have a home in Lewes, and a lot of those artefacts are there. We even had a little shop devoted to her, which we ran for 4 years. That's something I didn't mention. When we moved to Cornwall, or at least the shop was in Cornwall, in Foy, very good sea sporting area, Foy, of course, we ran that for 4 years, devoted to her. But ultimately, we came back home to Lewes, and all the material, most of the material, I still have, and I hope one day it will certainly either go to the family or be part of, obviously, something like Childhood Memories, maybe in Bethnal Green, where there's a museum, or even here in Brighton, which would be very nice.
It would indeed. Talking about presenting things, you're about to present Raymond Briggs' sofa. Now, what's that?
Well, in a nutshell, I live in Lewes, as I said. Raymond Briggs lives close by, in the Plumpton area, I believe. He's a lovely man, frequently seen in the town, and he's produced a lot of work for the Oldie magazine. Some of your listeners may be familiar with the Oldie magazine. There was a book using some of the material that he produced for the Oldie. It made me laugh, and I don't read a lot of books, but this one was wonderful. I think it was called Notes from the Sofa. So I approached Mr. Briggs, and unusually, because he's a bit of a curmudgeon, as he's entitled to be, he wrote back and said, yes, go ahead and do it, but don't involve me, which I thought was wonderful, because if Raymond had said, yes, and I'd love to be, is there anything I can do to help? It would have been a disaster. So we've gone ahead. It's a little play, a radio play. It's using much of the material that he wrote, but it also features his sofa. And that sofa is going to speak. And that's why this is very special. It's got a very famous voice, and I can't tell you who the voice is, but very famous voice. And so it's partly Raymond Briggs's words and then his life from the sofa. And it's going to be at the Pelham House Hotel on the 8th of April at 7:30. It's in aid of the Mayor of Lewes Charities. And I would simply love one or two of your friends to come along and join me at the Pelham House Hotel. It's a lovely location. Parking is easy on a Sunday. It is a Sunday. It's only £10 and you can get tickets from the Lewes Tourist Information Centre or from Bon Bouche, which is a lovely chocolate shop in Lewes.
Right. And, John, you said it was a radio play, but it's got an audience. So how does that work?
Well, of course, I can go back to the days of Much Binding in the Marsh, Up the Pole, The Goon Show, and I saw those shows live. Effectively, this is similar to that. In other words, we'll have the actors. I have to be honest with you, one of the reasons is that I wrote the play and someone said it's a jolly good play, but it's not a stage play, John. It's a radio play. So we've called it a radio play and we will be reading scripts where Raymond Briggs. There's no way that we could have learned millions of words. And much as I would have liked to, we couldn't do that. So we will be having scripts, but the audience scores will be part of, and we will be recording it. So who knows, there might be an end product as well.
Wow, that would be wonderful. And maybe we can include snippets on at home this morning. Who knows?
It would certainly entertain. It's very, very funny. I mean, it's dangerous to say that because everybody's got their own ideas about humour. But I found it extremely funny. And above all else, after the interval, I must make this point, we are going to have a little discussion with some of the people from the Oldie magazine. And the question is growing old a laughing matter? Now, that's something that I'm sure all of our friends
absolutely
will want to join in.
Mm, very much so. And we'll repeat the access details for tickets and things. Is there a potential audience? I mean, how many can you fit into the Pelham House Hotel?
It can take about 150 people. So you might say, oh, well, that'll be easy. But it isn't easy. You know, for a start, a lot of people don't. They see Raymond Briggs' sofa and they think, what's that? And a lot of people, if they don't know what it is, they think, well, no. Which it would be an enormous pity, because I happen to know that it is going to be one heck of an evening. I'm saying it's a one-off, but I hope that if it's good enough and people say that it's good enough, and after all I shall want to know from people, if it is good enough, I see no reason why it couldn't be produced at Brighton Festival, for example. Because after all, this whole question, as you know, on this excellent radio station, I mean, this whole question of getting older needs to be discussed, not always seriously, but sometimes with a smile. And that's what this evening's all about.
John, we look forward to that, and I'll certainly be there, and look forward to laughing along with everybody else. As to your own future, do you think we might entice you back into the front of the microphone once again?
Well, I give talks, Chris, to the women's institutes, mostly around Sussex. I've given over 170 talks, all about Radio Brighton, all about Mabel Lucy Atwell and Max Miller and all these things, which I thoroughly enjoy doing. And people do tend to say, why don't you broadcast now? The voice is a bit wobbly, as you've seen, but then we have this in common, don't we? I always say to people, well, I haven't changed, but actually broadcasting has changed, as I discovered when I was at Sussex Radio recently. It's all on screen. Being here with you in this nice studio with equipment that I partially understand, I think we both partially understand, it is tempting, I have to say. So who knows, Chris?
John, thank you very much.
Chris English has been talking to John Henty, who for many years presented the breakfast show on what was then BBC Radio Brighton. And as you may well have heard, Radio Brighton, which still exists and is now called BBC Sussex, is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. I'll just repeat the details of the live show that John Henty was talking about, which is called Raymond Briggs's Sofa. It's described as a radio play adapted for the stage with special guests. And it's taking place at the Pelham House Hotel in Lewes on Sunday, April the 8th at 7:30 p.m. You can get tickets, which are priced at £10, from the Lewes Tourist Information Centre and also from a shop called Bombouche in St Martin's Lane. Well, my co-presenter, Chris English, has just dropped into the studio quite unexpectedly. Chris, you're here to tell us about a film about Brighton that's being shown at the Duke of York's.
Absolutely. It's a new film. It's a soundtrack for Brighton. And 45 minutes long. It's directed by a lady called Elizabeth Thine and paints a dust-to-dawn portrait of the city featuring footage from the 30s to the modern day. As you say, it's at the Duke of York's on Monday the 26th of March at 9 o'clock. And Ed Hughes, who is the composer, says it's the perfect accompaniment to Brighton life. The footage of the city is very vibrant, full of colour, just like our city. My approach as a composer was to look into the rhythms of the city as people are parading, doing samba, or going to the burning of the clocks and pride. He added it was an exciting challenge to get across all of Brighton's various states. At the time, the film is very meditative, such as footage of swimmers in the sea at dawn. Other times it's extremely dynamic, such as the montage where commuters come into the station and the whole town wakes up. Elizabeth, a director, doesn't shrink from showing some difficult aspects of our city, including homelessness. It sounds like quite a look.
Yes, it sounds very interesting. Can you remind me again what the date is?
The date is the 26th of March, and that is a Monday evening, and it's at 9 o'clock in the evening.
At the Duke of York's?
At the Duke of York's, and it lasts about 45 minutes.
OK, thanks very much, Chris. It's well worth getting that into the programme, I think.
Absolutely.
So thanks for dropping in. Now, Preston Manor reopens to the public on April the 1st for its summer season. Back in 2014, our reporter Maya Davis was given a tour of the manor by Paula Wrightson and Sarah Tobias. And we thought, with Preston Manor being about to open, it would be a good time to have a listen to that report again. So it's over to Maya to introduce it.
Preston Manor is about to reopen to the public again, so we've come along to have a look around Preston Manor and talk to some of the people who work there, just to find out a little bit more about it. At the moment, we're sitting just outside the building. You might be able to hear a few birds, but you're more likely to be able to hear the traffic. Sorry about that. Anyway, we're going to go in shortly and talk to the staff there. Well, we've now come into Preston Manor and we're sitting in an office upstairs with two of the staff, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Paula Wrightson and I am the programme officer for Preston Manor.
And I'm Sarah Tobias and I'm a social and cultural and local historian.
Paula, we're in your office at the moment, which you say was one of the bedrooms of the manor. Is this part of the old bit of the manor?
No, the room we're in now was added when the house was extended in 1905. So quite a big part of Preston Manor is 20th century, which is kind of surprising, I think, to many people when they look at the house from the outside, that so much of it is so modern.
And how old's the rest of it, Sarah?
It goes back a long time. We're not really sure because Preston was a priest's homestead. There's been a priest's house of some sort in this area for quite a while. We know that it was here in 1066. When William de Warenne came over, he was given this as part of the Rape of Lewis. He was given the area. And we don't know what sort of house was built here at that time, but there's been a house here for a considerable amount of time, a two-roomed hall manor house.
Is that anything to do with the little old church as well that's just attached to the manor, or is that a separate church?
The church is probably, you're looking at the same date, the house, the earliest form of house here and the earliest form of church over next to us. So we're looking at really the best part of 1,000 years of history on this spot.
So there's really quite a lot for people to investigate if they wanted to.
Yes.
What have you got actually on show in the manor? Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that, Paula.
Well, the house today is set out to reflect really the late Victorian and the Edwardian period. So we're looking back just 100 years in the house. So if you walk into Preston Manor today, you're going into that upstairs, downstairs world of the grand house with the drawing room and the dining room and the ladies' morning room. And then you're downstairs in the servant quarters with the big Victorian kitchens. So that's the story we've been telling at Preston Manor for most of the period it's been a museum, and certainly for the last 25 years when we've been running our very popular Victorian school programme where the children come dressed in Victorian outfits and do role play based in 1897. But just recently with thinking of, through our event programme particularly, exploring a more modern part of the house history.
Sarah, the house is of course considerably older than the Victorian period, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about when it was probably built in the form that might have preceded the Victorian time?
Well, the 1600s, we know there was something here in the 1600s. And in 1738, the Weston family, so Weston Road, they came here and took it over. We don't have a great amount of the earlier history of the house known here. There is actually a stone downstairs, a brick in the wall, that mentions the 1738 and the Westons down there. So that's quite exciting because there's a huge amount of this house. It's quite a bit of a house that isn't open normally to the public. It's quite exciting.
Ooh.
Paula and Sarah then took Maya on a tour of the house.
Well, we're in a very splendid room with a cabinet on the wall that seems to be full of Chinese lion statues and a very, very large dining table. And I gather that this is the room that's now licensed for weddings. Is that right, Paula?
Yes, it is. This is the dining room, and you can get married here, and you can have civil partnerships here, and it's probably one of the most delightful rooms inside Preston Manor.
It is very pleasant indeed. I do like the colour scheme. I presume that's the original?
Yes, I find something like quite Christmassy about this red and green, but it's those splendid, opulent Edwardian colours.
This is a splendid room to get married in, I must say. Not if you want about 300 people for your wedding.
No,
what's the capacity?
It's this room seats 30, so really it's for if you're looking for a small-scale, intimate ceremony.
Ah, so a small-scale, intimate ceremony of any kind, particularly weddings and civil partnerships, Preston Manor's your place. Gosh, we've just come into the drawing room. This is absolutely amazing. A beautiful high ceiling, lovely light room. No ropes anywhere. It looks as though you can wander all the way around it. It is quite an astonishing room with all sorts of false doors and heaven knows what else. Sarah, can you tell me a little bit about this room?
Yes, this room is beautiful. As you can see, it has neoclassical proportions to it and style. If you're looking to your left, you've got a door that actually goes somewhere, and on your right, you have an identical door for the symmetry, which doesn't go anywhere at all. And the high ceiling, as you can see, the great dome in the ceiling goes right up, so it's another floor up, and goes right up into the very top of the building.
Good.
And the chandelier hanging down from there, so the chandelier actually goes right up into where that dome goes.
What's this room used for, Paula?
In the Edwardian period, the drawing room was the room that was a province of the lady of the house, the withdrawing room after the meal. The ladies would come into the room first, and they would perhaps have their coffee served in here after a meal, and they would sit and chatter and gossip, leaving the men to talk about important subjects like sport and politics over the port in the dining room, and the ladies would come into this room. But they would sit around the room in sort of an order of precedence. The most important ladies would be by the fireplace with the lady of the house, and the lesser ladies would be seated further away. So you have little conversational groups in this room. So unlike a modern day room with perhaps one suite of furniture, a drawing room of this period would have all sorts of little smaller sets of furniture around for those conversations to take place.
Yes, I can see that. That seems to be reflected in the way the room's laid out now, with little tables with two or three chairs next to them. And yes, groups of settees.
Today, the room is one of the rooms which is open to the public. And as you mentioned earlier, we don't have any rope barriers. You can walk right into all the rooms in Preston Manor, and we want people really to get the experience of what life was like in the Edwardian period. So you can walk across a luxurious carpet. You can't sit on the furniture. You'll see pine cones and little sprigs of holly set about the place to tell you that you can't sit down on them. But you really do get the feel of what it was like to live in the period.
Yes, we have a writing desk set out with photographs as though it's about to be used, and it looks as though somebody's been playing cards and just left them on the little table.
That's right. We've tried to give the house the feeling that the family perhaps have just popped out for the day, and you've got the opportunity to see what they've left behind.
And while we're standing here and looking through the room, you would, when the blinds were up, today the blinds are down, look out across Preston Park there, which of course was the back garden of the Stanford family in the Edwardian period.
Do we know much about the Stanfords?
Well, the Stanford family are the family that we cover most, the history of the Stanford family, because they were the last private owners of Preston Manor. And when Ellen and Charles Thomas Stanford died, they both died in 1932, some months apart. When they died, they'd already bequeathed the house in 1925 by deed of gift to the town of Brighton. And when they died in 1932, the deed came into act, and by October 1933, the house was a museum.
So that really moved very quickly then, didn't
it? Very fast. And you could imagine an awful lot of people in Brighton were fascinated to walk through the doors of what was a private house and have a good old poke around inside. Charles Thomas Stanford was the MP for Brighton around about the period of the First World War. So it would be a little bit like having a chance to have a look around David Cameron's house and see how he lives.
We're listening to Maya Davis going round Preston Manor under the guidance of Paula Wrightson and Sarah Tobias. A reminder that you're listening to At Home This Morning, a magazine programme for older listeners on Radio Reverb, which is on 97.2 FM, on DAB Plus Digital Radio and online at radioreverb.com. Well, let's get back to our tour of Preston Manor, in which Maya Davis is being shown round by Paula Wrightson and Sarah Tobias. And we catch up with them again as they go into a rather small and very dark room.
Well, we've come into another room now, which is very dark and spooky at the moment, but I've been assured that the lights are coming on gradually. Yes, they are. And looking at it, I can see what looks like leather wall coverings. Yes, absolutely splendid leather wall coverings. The whole thing seems to be very dark wood. This is very unusual leather wall covering, I think. It looks very different from what I've seen at Bateman's and at St Mary's Bramber. Sarah, can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yes, this is beautiful tooled leather that gives the effect of these lovely swathes of fruit and leaves actually coming out of the wall at you. Normally this would be Spanish leather, Cordoba leather, but this is actually Flemish leather. It's made in panels. Can you see square panels here? And the panels are put together. They don't
seem to match completely here. I think the colour's gone a little bit for some of them, but it is unusual, and it is a, you know, good wall covering.
It's really quite a small room compared with the others we've been in. Would one of you like to tell me a little bit about this room, what it's called?
Yes, I'll tell you about this room. We've just walked into a room called the Cleves Room, named after Anne of Cleves, because at one point it was believed that an earlier version of Preston Manor was property of the Anne of Cleves. That's not actually the case, but the room keeps the name. And as you said, it's papered in leather wallpaper. At one point it was used as a smoking room. But for me, this room is most interesting because of an event that happened here on the 11th of November 1886, when the family living at Preston Manor held a séance in this very room. And it's such a small, dark room, just the sort of place where a séance might be held. And I have to say, in the 1880s, it was incredibly popular to have séances. They were all the rage as a form of after-dinner entertainment. But why were the family living here holding a séance? Well, they believed that Preston Manor was haunted. They had all sorts of strange occurrences happening in the house, and they decided to find out who or what was haunting Preston Manor. And really, that's where our haunted reputation comes from, the 1880s. So a séance was held in this room, the room was darkened, and we're very lucky to have a transcript of that séance, so we know everything that went on that night.
Sarah, what's your take on the fashion for séances and the possibility of the house being haunted?
I love this house, and I have never felt anything about it that I thought was haunted, although nearly everybody I speak to who works here has had some experience. I'm really ambivalent about it, I think, because I don't want it to be haunted. I just want it to have a lovely atmosphere. But the story is, you know, we have written evidence, we have letters about the ghosts being seen here and all sorts of hauntings. And it was an important part of the Victorian period, particularly the late Victorian period.
The letters and documents and all the transcript of the séance form the basis of all the events that we run here, the ghost tours, or you can come and spend a night in a haunted house. Actually, it's only until midnight. And investigate the same way that the Victorians did. So we use original documents to explore the haunted history, and when we run our haunted house nights, we use Victorian ghost hunting techniques. So we keep very close to the history of the period when we're exploring the paranormal.
The party then moved on to a somewhat larger room, from which they could hear, occasionally, the sound of a school party in the room next door.
Well, we've come into the McCoy room, which is, I mean, I'm actually going to call a bit of a fake room, because everything you see in this particular room was put in round about the period of the Second World War, when the entire contents of this room, including the furniture and the wood panelling, were given as a gift to Brighton Museum. Well, there was nowhere to put a room like this in Brighton, and it was decided to fit it into Preston Manor. So the Stanford family who lived here certainly wouldn't have seen anything like this. They would find it extraordinary. This was originally the dining room.
I can see a sort of pink and white marble pseudo-Italianate fireplace with what looks like a tapestry over the top.
Isn't that absolutely incredible? And this was the entire room, including that fireplace, was brought down from the London house of Percy McCoy, who was the collector whose wife donated everything in here after his death.
And there seem to be glass cases with silverware in them.
Yes, this is, I think, the most sort of museum-like room we have in Preston Manor. As you said, we've got the glass cases. In fact, these cases themselves are part of history now, because they were made in the 1930s when the house first became a museum. If you walk into museums today, you won't see this type of case anymore. They're much more modern and swish. But these cases contain the family silver.
What use are you going to make of this room this year?
This is a very useful room. As you see, we have the little screen over there that shows our introductory video. But we mostly use this room for talks and classes. Sarah and I have given many talks and lectures in here. So it's a cosy room. You can sit around in here and enjoy learning in a very sort of convivial environment.
Well, the house is about to reopen to the public for this year, and it's been closed since October, I think, hasn't it? Is that right?
Yes. Preston Manor is closed to the public from October to March, and we reopen on the 1st of April, right the way through to the end of September. But there's always something going on at Preston Manor, even in our closed season, because we're open all year round for school groups, booked groups. If somebody wanted to bring a coach party here off season, they certainly could do, and also for events. So, for example, at Christmas time, we run Christmas events here, and we also run monthly a special tour called Behind the Scenes at Preston Manor, or Hidden House, where we take people into all the odd corners of Preston Manor, into the West Wing as well, which is closed to the public. And that happens off season. So if you can come on one of those tours, you get to see the whole of Preston Manor sort of on a special exclusive group. So although the house is closed to the public for the winter, there's always something going on.
I can hear from some of the noise that we've been experiencing in the background, you've actually got a school group going round at the moment.
We have, yes. They've come to take part in our Victorian role play session. So they come dressed in costume. And the moment they walk through the door, they are in the year 1897. That's the year we've chosen. And the people we have working here are actors and teachers. It's a very specialist job to immerse the children in the Victorian period. They have to mind their P's and Q's. They have to behave themselves. Incredibly strict. 2.5 hours. And they do not break role for this. So they are immersed in that period in history. And it's only right at the end of the session when they've done baking, they've used the mangle, they've washed clothes, we've really set them to work. They've swept the floors and they've learnt what it's like to come and work here as a Victorian servant. And right at the very end of the session, the role play staff break role, they say, hey, we're just actors, and they talk them down, as it were, from the experience they've been in. But the children absolutely love doing it. I think they secretly like being told what to do and being ticked off and being spoken to in a rather strict sort of manner by a butler and a housekeeper, because it's so out of their experience today.
Do you have a cleaning programme or a renovation programme during the closed period?
Well, like any old house, Preston Manor, there's constant repairs going on behind the scenes. And today, in fact, we've got our conservation volunteer staff in, and they do all sorts of little running repairs and cleaning jobs.
So you have people who volunteer to work here?
Yes, and they are absolutely fabulous bunch of people, and they keep the house spotless.
How do they get to be volunteers?
Well, you can apply to be a volunteer for Royal Pavilion and Museums, Brighton & Hove City Council. So if you go onto our website or contact any of our offices, you'll be put through to somebody who can sign you up as a volunteer. I have to say, we do get an awful lot of people who want to volunteer in museums, and people from all walks of life, but generally tend to be either people who've just left university or college, or older people who've retired and want to give something back. So we tend to have younger people and also older people.
I noticed there were quite a few steps up to the front door. Does the house actually cater for people with mobility difficulties?
We do. The house is accessible on the ground floor and on the first floor. We have a side door for anyone who can't get up those steep steps. We have wheelchair access and a lift. The only part of the house that unfortunately isn't accessible to anyone who can't climb stairs are the bedrooms on the first floor.
So people could come as a family group. Older people will find lots of things to see.
Absolutely. And anything that people can't see In the bedrooms, because that the lift doesn't go up to the top floor. We do have an introductory video that shows those rooms and pictures of the house as well, that people can sit and look through when they're on the ground floor, the first floor.
The house does really deserve to be better known, doesn't it?
Certainly does.
Maya Davis has been looking round Preston Manor under the guidance of Paula Wrightson and Sarah Tobias. Preston Manor is open to the public from April the 1st to September the 30th, every day except Mondays and bank holidays. The opening times on Tuesday to Saturday are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and on Sunday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. You can find out more from their website, which is at brightonmuseums.org.uk/Preston Manor. That's Brighton Museums, typed all as one word with no spaces, .org.uk/Preston Manor, which again is typed all as one word with no spaces. Or you can phone them, and their phone number is Brighton 292981. That's 01273 292981. That more or less brings us to the end of our programme, but there is just one short item to listen to before that. You may remember that we were told that one of the activities at Preston Manor is that parties of school children take part in a session in which they find out what life would have been like for a servant in Victorian times. They have to do various tasks like sweeping a floor and drying clothes using a mangle. And it was pointed out that the mangle was probably a piece of equipment that modern-day children would never have come across before. However, it occurred to Maya that the same probably wouldn't apply to listeners to At Home This Morning, as you'll hear.
Well, I think some of the equipment will not be out of the experience of some of our listeners. When you mentioned the mangle, I remembered the one that my landlady had in the flat I shared in London when I was a student. And she kept saying, do be careful with the mangle, I can't get spare parts. The firm that made it went out of business during the war.
Do you know, I'm all for bringing back the mangle. I always want to have a campaign to bring back the mangle. Because it's perfectly green, isn't it? It doesn't use any electricity. Think of that wonderful workout of turning the mangle where you're going to really not need to go to the gym or anything like that. And they really do squeeze the water out completely. I mean, and what's happened to all the mangles? That's what I want. Every household had a mangle. Where are they now?
We should have mangling lessons here.
I think we should.
Mangling classes here.
Absolutely.
So there you are. There's a new campaign for our programme and for our older listeners. Bring back the mangle. The workout that replaces the spin dryer.
So there we have it. A campaign to bring back the mangle. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. But in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways of getting in touch. You can either contact me by email at the following address, info@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's info, spelled I-N-F-O, at Grey Matters Productions, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. Or you can contact me via the Radio Reverb website. If you go to the website and find the page that's devoted to At Home This Morning, you can send me an email from there. And whichever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening, and until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.